Hello and welcome to Zero Hanger TV. I'm Mitch Keating, and joining me as always is Aidan Chiellini to go through all the latest from the AFL and outside as well. Plenty to cover today, looking at the top of the ladder and some of the Premiership leading clubs after the first 8 weeks of the season. A bit of a draft update, obviously our MVP and rookie rankings, and then answering some of your mailbag questions and takes. Aidan, how have you been?
Good, thanks, Mitch. Good, good. Just enjoying the footy like everyone else is. How about yourself?
Yes, no, it's been good. What did we have? Six straight days of footy? About five, six straight days of footy. And I think we've only got a couple left until a Thursday night showdown, which is going to be absolutely awesome. Bit of a rivalry round coming up, I think. Like, we've got a couple of exceptions, but the showdown on, the Q Clash, Battle of the Bridge up in Sydney.
Collingwood-Carlton.
Collingwood-Carlton's a massive one. Geelong and Melbourne, two oldest clubs. So I think we're about seven games out of nine for a perfect rivalry round. But I've got, West Coast and Essendon on Saturday night, which isn't the most memorable rivalry, but could be a good game nonetheless. But we'll take a bit of a focus to start the show on, looking at the top of the ladder in the competition and the clubs who are occupying the first few spots. The top few spots on the ladder, and obviously we still only have one club that's undefeated, which is Geelong, and they continue their winning start to the season with that win over Carlton. Looked pretty comfortable up until maybe the last 10 minutes of the fourth quarter when the Blues got a few late goals through Blake Akers, but Geelong again, another win, doing it with a lot of their strength coming from a system-based game, and that's obviously something that how they've thrived really well under Chris Scott for some time. But are they premiership favourites? Have we seen enough? Have they beaten the right clubs? Like, Carlton's a great scalp, obviously, whilst a bit undermanned the Blues. But do we have the Cats as the number one club for the flag this year?
I think they're either flag favourites or definitely joining the Giants up there as equal favourites. Just seeing how they played, especially against Carlton. What they did against Brisbane, they're very adaptable to the teams they come up against each week, to the conditions.
Yep.
Just remember the Brisbane game up at the Gabba, it was pouring rain down there. So, they were able to adjust on the run. And I think that's a credit to Chris Scott and the coaching staff down at Cardinia Park. And, their ability to, as I said, adapt on the run and kind of put the sword to the opposition as best as they can. And that's why I've got them definitely up the top so far. I don't like to say flag favourites yet. There's so much to play out. As we can look back to last year, Carlton were dead in the water up until a pretty impressive win streak, and same as Port Adelaide as well, and Collingwood the year before that. So I think it's still a little bit too early to tell, but if you were going to get, the sure price favourites, you definitely look at Geelong and GWS for their start to the season so far.
Yeah, I probably don't even have them top three, four, to be honest. Yeah, stick with Giants, Sydney, Melbourne, and Carlton. I feel like there's someone I'm leaving out there, but you can certainly put Adelaide, Collingwood, a bit shakier. Brisbane, who probably were my tip at the start of the year, are way too far back to be a top four consideration. Maybe can slide into the top eight by the end of the year. And I guess that's all you have to do is look at last year's, final eight or so rounds and where Carlton, GWS and Sydney all came from. So there's plenty to play out, obviously. And as for Geelong, I think it's this next month that we're going to get a really clear indication on where they're at. Their midfield is obviously the weakest area of the ground. And they, again, got battered in the midfield on the weekend, but the back line is so resilient, holds up so well. Even without Top Stewart, did fantastically well. And they've probably got the best forward line in the competition when you consider Cameron and Hawkins, plus Ollie Henry, Grein Myers, Brad Close, Tyson Stengel. It's a pretty loaded front seven. And what their midfield is able to gain from that group is Cameron and Myers pushing it further up the field. So that's working fantastically well, but it's probably at the contest that they struggle a lot. And their next four games, Melbourne, one of the best midfield groups. Port Adelaide's midfield four or five is stellar on its day. And then Gold Coast, who just don't really have a weakness in that top three of Anderson, Raoul and Miller. And then after that's GWS, another one of the game's best midfield groups. So this next 4 weeks, arguably the four toughest midfield packs to come up against. The Cats, Andrew Miller's holding up well enough, but it is obviously still a weakness for them. So I think we're going to get a good idea of how that holds up. And if, you know, it is going to be too much against those four clubs, how the back line is going to fare with a lot more pressure potentially than what they've had to start the season. So, like I said, I think I still have Geelong behind the Blues, even though they beat them over the weekend. And, yeah, I probably still have GWS ahead of them as well, and Sydney too. So there's a bit to play out there for the Cats, but, yeah, I don't have them as favourites.
Yeah, I think Chris Scott knows, especially with minor injuries to Patrick Dangerfield in the early parts of the year. Cam Guthrie just returned as well. So their injury room has looked very different. You've got Tanner Bruin there. Jack Bowes has now moved in there almost permanently. Tom Atkins has gone in and out. Brandon Parfitt finally securing a spot.
It's a weird group, isn't it?
Yeah. And and that's the beauty, I think, of Geelong and what they've proven for, I think, over a decade now. It's that regeneration on the run. They're giving the looks to a Tanner Bruin, Brandon Parfitt, a bit more of a permanent midfield role. Yeah. And what they're doing is they're really locking down the defensive weapons and not just their back six. So they've got their wingers really rolling back hard. Max Holmes have gone back there, maybe as a defensive wingman or more of a half back role to really secure it. You've got Mitch Duncan's you know, experience and expertise down there to really sort them out. As you mentioned, Tom Stewart, Sam DeConin keeps doing it week in, week out. And what they're doing is they're then slingshotting the ball from their half back, kind of like what Collingwood did last year, which turned out to be quite successful. They're really, you know, loading up their back line, almost flooding it to an extent with, you know, 9, 10, 11 players in their maybe defensive 50 or definitely their back half. And then using, you know, the link players, as you mentioned, Grian Myers, Brad Close, and, you know, some of the rebounding halfbacks as well to springboard. Even Jeremy Cameron we've seen roll through the wings and even the half back line as well at some points of certain games. And, you know, that's why I think, yes, it is early and this next month will be quite telling. And the other teams definitely have their capabilities in terms of being premiership contenders or genuine contenders anyway. But that's why I think Geelong's ability to adjust and realise that, yes, at the moment we don't have the strongest midfield. So we'll kind of make sure our back line is as strong as it can be and then translate into their offensive line. But moving on to the, I guess not upcoming draft, but this year's draft, you've been keeping a close eye on some of the young guns coming through. There was two academy games in recent times. One of the big names is Levi Ashcroft, which is Will Ashcroft's younger brother and the son of Marcus, Brisbane champion from back in the early 2000s. Is there anyone else, including Ashcroft, that you've kind of liked so far in the early part of 2024?
Yeah, at least taking into the two academy games. Like, we haven't had too much talent league to go off, but you know, enough to give us glimpses. But Ashcroft's certainly the best across the two academy games. Like, they lost both to Coburg and Footscray. But this is more just seeing what these kind of teenagers, we're talking 17-year-olds, can do against experienced talent, like, you know, VFL, and on the weekend, obviously, up against Footscray, AFL talent as well. So we saw Riley Sanders have a pretty big performance after getting dropped, and obviously he's coming up against some ex-teammates and plays at a level that he's more comfortable with, but he was one of the best on for Footscray. Oscar Baker was in there, Caleb Poulter, Ryan Gardner, Charlie Clark. So there was heaps of AFL-listed players for the Dogs, and Levi Ashcroft, best on ground for the AFL Academy, that is. And that follows a game against Coburg that he was pretty dominant in the midfield. 33 disposals was the highest across both sides, and then I think it was another 27 or so against Footscray on the weekend. So he's really strengthened his case as the pick one selection. We'd see him go one better than his brother Will, who went at pick two, even though Will was probably the best player in his draft class as well. So it's pretty open field all up. So you look at Ashcroft, Josh Smiley, who was probably, if it wasn't Ashcroft, he was probably the best midfielder over the weekend, and he's about 195 centimetres, I think, which is, you're looking at a Patrick Cripps build of just an absolute bull inside, and can have a fair bit of damage in the front half of the field as well. So he was, you know, better over the weekend than compared to the Coburg game, but still pretty decent across both. Finn O'Sullivan made his comeback against the Dogs after a broken thumb kind of kept him to one game prior to this week. So he was quiet, but I think going off the runs he put on the board last year, he'll be another one in that pick one contention. Sid Draper's another one who's been sidelined for the start of the year through injury. So it's kind of, I think they're the names that you're probably looking at for that kind of pick one consideration. And Ashcroft certainly might be the one in front at this point of the year. Another name who's really, I think, strengthened their case as maybe a top five, probably top 10, but maybe a top five consideration is Luke Traynor. So Sandringham Dragons key defender, 194 centimetres, good intercept and pretty good one-on-one. But I think he'd probably be better used if he was that second option who can fly across. But I think both games he's he's across both AFL Academy games, he's probably averaging close to 20 touches, you know, five marks, and just really dominant in the air and clean by foot, which is really what you're after for the ball-winning defender at his height, and can just move the ball cleanly. So he's done really well. He was best on in the loss to Coburg, and then again, one of the AFL Academy's best over the weekend as well. Just some updates on some familiar names as well. So we've got the Camporelli twins, Ben and Lucas, both quite strong in the first game, a bit quieter in the second. Probably similar can be said for Leonardo Lombard, who's a Gold Coast Academy talent. Other tied player like Tyler Welsh, Adelaide father-son, I think he kicked another goal. So, you know, showing signs and up against some pretty strong talent for a key position. Teenager was pretty good. Tom Gross, solid. Jagger Smith, again, solid. Job Shanahan seems to be doing pretty well out of Bendigo as one of the key forwards. It is a very midfield-dominant class, which is probably why you can highlight guys like Welsh, Shanahan and Traynor earlier, who I think will have a bit of swing in, you know, probably draft rankings, just given the desire to select outside of midfielders, and some of the clubs like a Hawthorn or North Melbourne, who probably are more inferred key position talent. But when they get to draft night and they're holding, you know, the top two picks or two of the top five picks, it's going to be quite interesting to see how that all plays out. So that's kind of a bit of an update. Obviously, yeah, they'll have national champs right around the corner, more Coates Talent League for the Victorian players and some of the Northern State players, but obviously plenty to keep an eye on in the Sample and Waffle as well.
Awesome. And now moving on to our MVP rankings.
Oh, it's heating up. This was, I think, looking at our current top 10, I think it was six players polled 20 votes. Yep. I think we had seven for the weekend, and six of them now sit in our top 10, which is staggering. We had a few others that polled quite strongly, and I think in our current top 10, only one polled less than 13 votes during round seven. So just having a look at some of the names involved there. So we had Zach Merritt, Anzac Day medalist, with 20 votes. Max Gorn was also best of field in Wednesday's win over the Tigers. Tom Green, dominant. Caleb Sarong, dominant. Jeremy Cameron, 20 votes as well. And then Noah Anderson was probably the leading figure in that Suns midfield, but just about any of them could have pulled away 20 votes. So, you know, add in that Patrick Cripps had 14 in a loss. Matty Rowell, who was kind of, you know, accompanying Anderson, had 13. And our leader, Isaac Heaney, has pretty much pulled in just about every game, I think
so, yeah.
Had 17 votes, so that puts him at 102 votes with plenty on his tail.
Yeah, it's definitely heating up, and you can see some of the names there. I think Zach Merritt's having just behind Isaac Heaney. I think everyone's kind of got the Sydney Swans midfielder ahead of the pack at the moment. But as you can see in our rankings, we're rating Merritt's work at the moment. As you mentioned, you know, Melbourne's Max Gorn keeps going from strength to strength. He might have had a somewhat down year last year. I think he was kind of battling some injuries a little bit, just compared to what he's produced in years gone by. So I think he's definitely returned to that level of you know, efficiency and helping out his midfielders. And, you know, when he's doing his best work, it's not just his ruck work, it's obviously the stuff around the ground and helping out May and Lever in defence and potentially even going up forward when needed as well. And Caleb Sarong probably not doesn't get as much recognition being from the West or playing for the Dockers, that is. So, yeah, it's good to see he was going, you know, to another level, backing up last year and the previous year when the Dockers did make the finals too. So he's just been super. But, yeah, as you said, only Zach Butters from our top 10, the only one to not poll a vote.
Costly at the moment, yeah.
Yeah, and he was sound against the Saints, but I did see, you know, more Jace Burgoyne probably got the votes there. Will and Drew, who was a medalist from Friday night, he was pretty good as well. And I think Charlie Dixon kicked four, so that's probably where you see most of the votes go to the power there.
Yeah, and I think some of the players you mentioned, Sarong's had a good couple of weeks. Patrick Cripps has had a good couple of weeks. Cameron as well. I think that's back-to-back 20 performances or two in the last 3 weeks at least. And then, yeah, Merritt and Gorn, 1 point between those two in second and third. And now there's only a 12-vote gap between Merritt and Heaney. So that's really close. And Swans in the Q clash, you know, if the Giants can kind of get the better of their rivals and Heaney has a quieter game, it's there for the taking for any of Matt Rowell, Max Gorn or Zach Merritt at that top spot. So that's going to be quite close. And then looking at our rookie rankings as well, another two changes at the top, at the, I guess, lower end actually of our rankings, Darcy Wilson and Will Graham into fifth and sixth spot respectively. We mentioned Wilson last week and he had his Rising Star nomination performance in round six. And I think he just backed it up, albeit in a loss, to over the weekend to find himself for the first time in our top six. And then Will Graham, a tackling machine at the Suns. Yeah. He had 11 on the weekend. He's averaging over 8 a game. I think if he keeps up his rate, he'll look at over 160 tackles for a season, which is some feat. And for a first-year player, I think the record is 114 by Sam Palpepper about 7 years ago. So that he'll smash that record. It won't take him too long to get past that if he stays in Damien Hardwick's side, which you think he would. So a couple of new names there. And they replace Hugo Garcia and Harvey Gallagher. But there's some movement as well at the top of our rankings, albeit Harley Reid holds first spot despite being managed.
Yeah, well, Melbourne's wingman Caleb Windsor remains in fourth, but Colby McKercher from North Melbourne with a pretty impressive performance across halfback. I think it was 32 touches, which, you know, it probably seems like the norm now for players like him and Ashiz or Nick Dacos, but we can't, you know, remove the fact that this is his seventh AFL game, playing, you know, one of the toughest competitions in the land. So McKercher's performance definitely sees him rise up to second spot on our rookie rankings, with Sam Clohisi, their son's ex-academy, but I think I picked up from Werribee as a sort of mature ager, as a 21, although this is his first year debuting and playing in the league. He did drop to third position, although it was a decent performance on the weekend, but probably
still strong.
Probably not to the level of McKercher in terms of that replacement. But Harley Reid, as we've known, despite being rested this weekend, he's been super in the past fortnight. So it made sense probably for him to hold his spot, and we expect him to come back this week, I'd imagine, against the Bombers.
Yeah, fresh as well. He'll be it'll be pretty hard to chase him down over this week as well, I would have thought. That takes some effort from either McKercher or Closey to go to the top. And some honourable mentions, some decent debut from Darcy Jones. Certainly has him in our sights over probably the next month. Jake Rogers was maybe one of the best performing rookies over the weekend. I think it was only his second game, so probably just need a little bit bigger of a window, just given what everyone else has kind of had so far this season. Zane Dersmael was another roux that was impressive. And then I think Harvey Thomas is the one that can consider himself unlucky not to be in the top six this week after falling out a couple of weeks ago and having a pretty good game against Brisbane over the weekend in the absence of Toby Green and Brent Daniel. So, there are a few names, obviously, that are certainly in the mix at this point, as is probably Demon Blakehouse, another honourable mention from round seven. And then to finish off the show today, a mailbag, our favourite segment, where you guys can send in your questions, takes, or just about anything you want us to discuss on the show. And we've got a couple today. First one is a question from Tom Knight. Who is the big fish Hawthorn are planning to land?
Well, I think we were talking about this just before the show, probably looking at either end of the ground, either a key forward or a key back. We're looking at, I think Logan McDonald comes out of contract, but I think we both agreed he probably won't leave Sydney. And if he does, it might be for WA, his home state, maybe a West Coast or Fremantle. Jamal Ugahagan's still up in the air. The Hawthorn definitely, by reports, do have the money to kind of compete with maybe the Bulldogs and rival clubs. But then again, you know, they sit 1-6. It's not necessarily an enticing project for Ugahagan to come into the side. And again, I don't think he's a type of player, although I think he can be a superstar, he won't, you know, turn the fortunes around of that club. But they're probably two of the names that initially come to mind as a key forward prospect.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of, I guess, available key forwards coming into the year. And the two you mentioned are probably the two that would fit Hawks the best. But yeah, very unlikely. While Hawthorn could offer pretty sizable deal, you'd think the Dogs have something like packaged for Ugahagan, and at the same time a club like Freo or West Coast could probably rival pretty decent offers for McDonald. Then Dockers do have, you know, three first round picks this year as well, which will come in handy for trade negotiations. Yeah, it'd have to be a key defender if they want to land someone big, but at the same time couldn't do that last year missing Ben McKay, and the players available this year probably, you know, aren't as big of a name. So maybe they have to look at the contractor pool, because what we've seen the past 2-3 years, particularly in the trade period, is a surprise, you know, contracted player seeking a move, you know, deep into the off-season. So it'd have to be that, because the key defenders, the best ones you're looking at are Josh Battle. It sounds like Jack Henry's going to re-sign. You know, Jake Colajasny, Nick Haynes, some of the guys we mentioned last week with Collingwood. So it's going to be hard to see them land a big fish. They've got the money to do so, but and they really wanted to attack free agency this year. It's just going to be a matter of who, given that I think a lot of the guys that are off contract this year that are eligible for free agency are more probably aren't the list needs for Hawthorn. And I don't think they want to be packaging that kind of money when you're talking, you know, 800 to 1.1 million for players who probably just going to be forcing another young first round pick out of a position. So it's going to be quite hard for Hawthorn, I think. And the second one, we've got a take from Hayden Kelly. Alex Pearce has 1 foot in the door for AA selection. Yeah, that's, I think that's fair. We had our All-Australian team named after the first five rounds, I think it was. And he's your fullback, centre halfback, whatever you want to call it, maybe with Sam Taylor. Yeah, fantastic first month in particular. I think he came up against three of last year's top five key forwards. That's, you know, Taylor Walker, Nick Larkey, and Joe Danaher. I'm sure, I think there's someone else in that mix that he did pretty well against. And then obviously also actually also came up against Charlie Curnow and or Harry Mackay in Gather Round and was solid at once again, albeit in a loss. So, yeah, it's going to be a hard one to argue with.
Yeah, definitely the two premier key defenders at the moment. As you mentioned, yeah, Alex Pearce and Sam Taylor. I do have Stephen May kind of lurking in the shadows at the moment. I think he's had a really good start to the year, but definitely Alex Pearce has taken his game to another level as a skipper of the Dockers, and yeah, he's been super so far in 2024.
Yeah, certainly the response I think they wanted from him after a down year last year. That will wrap up today's episode of Zero Hanger TV. Obviously, you can catch all our other video content and some of our online editorial content on zerohanger.com and on our YouTube and socials pages.